he did something, I think, that maybe did outlast other things, in that he took the analogy of, you know, the bog men and the bodies that were found in bogs, and used that kind of ancient rites to help us understand our present. And of course, he did that with mythology as well.
Yeah, Seamus, that digging was providential, because Seamus began to dig, which would be a lower surface, not a portal, but a lower surface of the earth. And the Tolland man, of course, came from Jutland, Denmark, but immediately rang a bell. Seamus was now, you know, where would I go to? I could go down. And of course, you find old butter hundreds of years old, we find bodies. But this suddenly meant that Seamus, where all the poets were still going around and there, Seamus was digging, already digging physically and poetically, if you like.
At his funeral, Monsignor Brendan Devlin spoke very well. He was also conscious of Heaney's relationship with his faith. Did he ever speak to you about that as a Jesuit priest?
I kept off on top of Seamus when I spoke to him. But I did say, just before I left, for the Seamus, I'd say Mass for you. And he actually opened his eyes. Oh, God, he said yes. Then I thought the better of it. And I wrote him a little letter, put under his drawer when I was going, Seamus, I hope you don't mind if I said Mass. And he said, I better put something else. So I wrote a little time how I almost met Joe Brodsky out in Dunleary. Immediately I went back, Seamus didn't say a word about the Mass, but chatted away about Joe Brodsky and how he met all the big guys. And he was so shy at the start meeting Milosh and these guys who won the prize before him. What to do? I said, when did you meet Lowell? At a party for his wife. When did you meet Spender? At the same party. When did you meet Derek Walcott? Oh, Derek is a talker, he said. And he talked about a number of these guys. And then I put my foot in it. He started talking about Polish poetry then. I said, come on, I was at UCD, Seamus, when you were still in the college. I was trying to read Mickiewicz, which is a 19th century romantic poetry. It's their epic, their national epic. But I found it very, you know, in transition, very, very slow moving aspect. And Seamus made his first correction to Duddy. All over in the place, said, that is a key book in the tradition of Polish poetry. And he had translated some medieval poetry with the help of someone years ago, and of course then followed the Polish right up through Herbert and all the rest of them. He said, no, that's a key text. He said, that is a text that puts the ideal of women, he said, it had never done again before in Polish poetry before that.
Yeah, he had an amazing sense of maybe the deeper things that that were underlying, and he unearthed them, and as you say, that metaphor of digging is very apposite for that. He also, I was struck by, after his stroke, he wrote a poem, and in that poem he referred to he said he was taken with the Gospel of St. Matthew and the man with the dropsy. So I don't think there was a hostility necessarily there to faith, but I mean, I'm interested in this because I've heard different interpretations. Some people say he lost his faith completely. Others say he lost his religious practice, but not his faith. Have you any insight into that?
That piece from Matthew comes up already years and years ago in another poem, where he talks about the paralytic being let down. But of course, much more opposite in this, where he was in, where he tells when he said, when I was in the ambulance coming, and my wife told me, I didn't feel anything. He said, well, I was paralyzed, I didn't feel anything. But it's just a little glimpse of it coming down. Now, in the Guardian, the guy talked about Seamus never lost his conscious and consciousness of a Catholic king and came up all over again. Whereas Laura Marlow, the other days, you know, said in the interview in France, Seamus said, he said, look, I think that the Catholic mythology is worn out. That's why I'm getting more relish from and consolation from following Aeneas down to the underworld and taking Dante. Of course, Seamus didn't realize Dante was Christian. But no, I can see any growing, you know, intelligent, mature Catholic having problems with the Church. And certainly I often feel that a lot of these poets I meet, that they didn't keep up with Catholicism. I mean, if they'd read Van Valsar, if they knew their Augustine well, or if they lived in France for a while, I'd say if Seamus lived in France, like Eliot, the depths of the Catholic thing was so, but he was often on the lines, you see.
So finally then, but two things, Brendan. First of all, his legacy. What would you say, both as a man and as an Irishman and as a poet?
Yeah, I think Seamus has left a marvellous example of someone who is not a prima donna. There's a lot of, forgive me, a lot of them are prima donnas. And a lot of them can get sore and hurt. Seamus rides that very well. He was hurt, for some things were said. Des Mendel's thing now, when I talked to Des Mendel. But he wrote out a number of jealousies. He came in, no shame, there's no point. And that's great, because some poets can't do that. And then what has he left? Well, now, again, it's invidious to compare, is he the greatest poet since Yeats? We don't do that. But what Seamus has done is he's put together a body of poetry that one book follows the other. Very few poets have done. There's a body of poetry. Yeats rigged his poetry towards the end, you know, so it would look like that.
Yeah.
And therefore, you know, he left certain things out. But if you follow Seamus' book, there's often a clue at the end of what's coming. So he started at the top, dug down, went in, then moved out from merely rural stuff into the classical poetry and really world poetry and European poetry as he knew it. So here was a man who was a world culture alone, not only but Ireland.
Yeah, not just an Irish poet. And maybe that's why he will be so missed and around the world, both for his poetic contribution. But I think you've made a very good point there as well about that he wasn't a prima donna. Not only that, I remember as a student, I used to think, studying English, that in order to be a good artist, you had to be tortured half and half, nervous, neurotic, or horrible to other people. And I often used to think, Seamus Heaney's not like that. Tell me just finally about the woman, the great and the good were at his funeral. It was a beautiful, solemn event and fitting for the kind of man that he was with the piper. And I know in your beloved Derry, he had, in the Forum, had just recently performed with Liam O'Gorflin. That's one of the last things I think he did publicly. There was a woman there from the States. Tell me about her.
Yeah, Helen Venner. I met Helen Venner. I wanted to meet her for years. Helen worked in Boston University, then she moved to Harvard. But before that, Seamus met her. And she was such a close reader of poems. Seamus was a kindred spirit. People say he sort of kept up to her because of her status, but de facto he knew her before, and de facto she loved his kids, always brought them presents. She came to the Yeats School several times, she came to Dublin, but they became family friends, and Seamus invited her to Oslo, the one person in his family group, because she was a family friend and said they're quite often, and he loved the chat and the family, and Mary loved them very well. So Helen Venner is really the doyenne. She hates that sense. She is the doyenne of poetry in the States. She's written brilliantly and deeply on Yeats. And recently a book just came out on Emily Dickinson. And she had books. Seamus quotes her critical books as the, you know, substance for him. Now, the other thing he did mention, Seamus, did you ever, Driscoll asked him, did you ever actually, when you were doing drafts, did you ever give Helen Venner that? I certainly did, so I gave her drafts of my poems because she read and find any flaws I had. Now, I was chatting to Helen Venner and she was most gracious. And I thought, you know, I talked to people around her. Everybody's asked me, introduce us to Helen Venner. And I was like, I don't know her very well. And, of course, Kieran Carson was around, Edna O'Brien was around. We were talking to everybody. We had a great time. But I was holding on to Venner, you see. So, anyhow, I said to her, you know, it's a funny side. It just came into my head last night that Seamus started off writing a book and now he's come full circle. And she you know, twisted her eyes at me and lowered her eyebrows. I mean, like, Seamus wrote a book about the frog spawn and that's called The Death of an Actress. And he used that as the name of his book. But it suddenly dawned on me that Seamus, who wrote all this nature poetry, now at the end of his life has come full circle. We now have The Death of an Actress.